I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How you day? Okay, we're back. We're back again with Fleur. Now, last time you heard about Fleur's background, how she grew up, the identity crisis she had, what she learned from her mom being mixed herself, why her dad traveled around so much. And we ended the episode on a cliffhanger, how she figured out what she wanted to do. Today, we're going to dive into some of the ways she sees the world and tries to educate people on being better global citizens. We're going to start off with what she wants to do with her life. Fleur?
Well, what I want to do with my life, it's I think the answer is in everything I've told. Based on what I've seen growing up, the inequalities, the ignorance on both sides, both on the Western side and on the African side, and even more than that, now I see it everywhere. Discrimination is always based on, you know, the fear of losing something that is dear to you, the fear of actually the unknown, the fear of the other. It's about that at the end of the day, and I'm thankful that I saw that I went through all of that, because now it really helped me to understand a lot of issues we have here. I mean, I live in the Western world now, but anywhere I go, I see it. I recognize the same things. And so what I know is that, you know, I have this understanding that I need now to, you know, I need to know how to better explain the way I see things, you know, to help people managing differences or understanding differences or be more comfortable with differences. And I do it at work, and I do it actually with everyone I meet and with my friends and even with family. It's something, I think it's like a mission. It's like a personal mission. I'm always doing that. You know, I can be just hanging out with people, and then we start talking about, you know, issues that we have here, for example, in Switzerland, and based on, you know, what people will tell me, I always find a way to try to explain to people that they might actually not see the full picture.
So I love this so much, because she's basically taking something that she went through, whether it was good or bad, to use that as her superpower. She realizes this as a call to action, and she's armed herself with this as a way to go about the world. Just listen to what she says here.
I can give you an example. Last week, I was with this woman who was telling me that she's moving to Canada, and her boyfriend is mixed, and she really, really, really wants to have mixed children. And I was like, okay. And she told me, and if it doesn't work out with him, I still want to date a mixed guy or a black guy because I really want to have mixed children. And I was like, oh, okay. Why? Because they're the most beautiful.
Okay.
I've heard that all my life. So I told her, okay, look, you know, there's what we call fetishism around.
Yeah, fetishizing. Yeah.
Yeah. Around the mixed child. It's something that exists and I'm very sensitive to it. And she was like, oh, okay, what do you mean? And I told her, you know, being a mixed child is not easy. It's not just about the looks. It's not just about being cute. Raising a mixed child is complex. And I tried to make her understand that just by focusing on the external, on the appearance of the child, she might completely deny actually the most important part, which is the identity. She will not, because I've seen it growing up. I've seen it around me. I have a lot of friends who are dealing with the way their parents brought them up, you know? How sometimes one parent might be completely unconscious of, you know, what the child is going through, or just the way they would talk about the other parent or the other parent's family or a certain group in society, how it can affect the development of the child. Because this child is actually completely, he's not one thing, he's different things. So I tried to make her understand that that it's more than that, and she should actually think about that, and love has no color. Like, she might actually fall in love with an Asian guy. She might actually fall in love with a French guy, since she's French. So, yeah, you know. And I tried to give her some context, because the you know, le métissage, or the mix of of people, it's a very sensitive topic in certain societies, especially in the societies where I grew up in, because historically, les métis, or mixed children, were considered as an improvement of the race. You know, you had the European and the African. So, and I've heard that personally. I've heard that a few times when I lived back there. That they told me, your immune system is stronger than your dad's because you have African blood, but you're smarter than your mom because you have the European blood.
Wow, you know,
yeah.
That's insane. And this goes on to a lot of what, you know, the colorism that we hear about, whether it's here in the United States, or, you know, growing up in Nigeria, I saw a lot of bleach and creams. It happens in Asia, it happens in, you know, different parts of the world, where people are basically saying the lighter you are, the more attractive you become. And it's interesting hearing it from your perspective, because obviously, you identify as mixed and you have different cultures, and people, I guess, sometimes can see you and fetishize you and say that you must be superior to a darker person. But it's always interesting hearing it from your perspective, because you give it such context where you try to explain to people that that has nothing to do with your intellect. It's more about how we've been programmed to view beauty and intelligence.
Absolutely. Yeah, colorism, oh la la. yeah, it's so sad. Like, you know, growing up, actually, it's something I forgot to mention. I actually wanted to be darker.
You did?
Yes, for the longest time. I thought my mom was the most beautiful person. My sister is a bit darker than I, and the reason why I wanted to be darker was not to to stand out so much, you know? I'm lighter, so I wasn't invisible, you know. You would see, she's someone, you know, a white person's child, you know, and yeah, this would bring certain things with it. Because there's this superiority complex that is very, very present. And I guess I suffered from it.
Wow. So that's so interesting, because people normally talk about inferiority complex. You said a superiority complex.
Well, from different sides, you have the superiority complex from certain people and an inferiority complex from other people. Mm. I mean, the attitude is always the same, but whether it's inferiority or superiority depends on the ethnicity of the person, on their own experience with other ethnicities, and on the context. So I never really tried to understand, okay, who's feeling what about me, But I was aware of it, and I was aware of the fact that I was representing, just by the way I look, a standard of beauty, you know. I didn't choose it, and bon, voilà. If I'm able to have a conversation with a person who, like, for example, I don't know, I go back to Senegal and I walk down the street and I hear someone, a man, usually it's a man, or even a woman. Yes, last time I was at the airport and there was a woman. I had braids, you know, braids, Fulani braids. And I also have Fulani origins. And she told me, Fulani are the most beautiful. And I said, all ethnies in Senegal are beautiful, and you look wolof. You're really beautiful with your very dark skin. And she looked at me, you know, it was weird for her to hear that from me. and the Fulani also tend to be lighter, you know, lighter. And I will hear things, if it's possible, if I hear that I can have a conversation with the person, I will try to make them understand that beauty is not just about your skin color, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So much more.
So much more. And the beauty standards do affect a lot of the way we see things. And I'm curious to hear your perspective on colonialism and beauty standards. Do you think they're connected, or do you think...
Absolutely.
Oh, you think so? Okay, well,
of course.
Let's hear it.
Wait, what? Hair. And it's, you know how there's also this whole trend now. Okay, with curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
There's curly, and then there's afro, and there's what's it? Nappy. Even if you just look at the trends, there is also inequality between the types of hair. Curly hair is seen as the best hair, but it has to be a little light, you know? If it goes a bit to the nappy side, it's not considered as beautiful as the curly hair, you know, the Latina or the mixed girl, or, you know. Why? Well, all these products that were brought to Africa to change the texture of the hair, of the color of the skin, to make people feel as if they were not good enough or not beautiful enough, or, you know, compared to the to the Europeans. It was a way of it's a weapon of mass destruction, huh? Because, oh, wow. Yes, it is. Because when you see now, culturally, like, we had, it's coming back, but there were so many techniques to braid hair, to, you know, to have these beautiful coiffures, you know, using the African hair. That all these techniques have been lost, and there are different schools, even I think in the US, that are opening up to try to, you know, to relearn all these techniques, to get back the heritage and the culture. So this is about beauty. And then, yeah, of course, the lighter you are, the more beautiful you seem, the more successful you seem. People immediately think that you're more intelligent, that you are richer, mm-hmm. and that you are going to bring blessings just by the fact that you're lighter.
Right.
And it's a vicious circle, because then it actually becomes a reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for those listening, the reason why we're connecting colonialism with this is a lot of colonialism was divide and rule, divide and conquer. So Europeans came to Africa, several other continents, to basically take lands that they felt could benefit their own countries. And they divided the continent based on that, not on the tribes or the ethnic groups. And so many times, in order to maintain rule, they will divide the ethnic groups and say, hey, that's your enemy. Fight amongst yourselves. And essentially, they'll create this, you know, superiority complex as well as inferiority complex. And sometimes, especially if you look at South Africa, for example, they will create a hierarchy where, the lighter people got more privileges than the darker people. And a lot of that still, is still visible in today's world and how people perceive others or how people perceive other tribes. And so a lot of what Fleur is talking about here is the effect of the conditioning from, colonialism, which is a cousin to slavery and imperialism and all those things. So a lot of how we think about the world is really not accurate if you really come down to it, but it's more about what we've been told from maybe even our parents or from what we've heard or what we read about how the media portrays certain people, and then it just enters our psyche. So I think what Fleur is challenging us to do is to understand where our thoughts come from and why we think the way we think, and if it's actually true.
You said it all.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay. Yeah. So then the question then becomes, how can we now make an impact in today's on a grassroots level? I know that, we've talked about identity. We've talked about the colonialism, talked about your background. But now that you've identified a lot of the problems from, us already having a wrong way of thinking, how can we move past that and then make an impact in today's world where there's a lot of divisiveness and a lot of ignorance and a lot of, isms in the world? How can we grow from here?
I think I've had a lot of discussions about that, especially here in Europe, with the rise of extreme right movements that we actually cannot really. Yeah, it's a bit, it's rising so fast and so strongly that it's people who completely disagree with the positions feel completely, helpless. But I think it starts with mutual understanding, because when you look at these movements, basically all the messages that you read, they're based on fear. And you need to address that fear. as a person who has a different perception on society, who understands issues a bit differently or differently from certain people who might be, you know, scared of foreigners or migrants, refugees. I think that the attitude that we should have is one of, you know, understanding and also trying to communicate, because we are going to divide our societies even more if we demonize the other, you know. But it's very easy to see, to say, these guys, they're racist, what can we do, you know? But it's rising. So I know at my level, obviously, in my environment and because of the work that I do, I do not really come across people who are from the far right movements, but I do come across sometimes people saying, you know, ignorant things, or sometimes they, like 2 weeks ago, something happened here at the University of Lausanne, where students painted their body and their whole face in black and came disguised as Africans. But you would talk with them and they would seem completely, you know, what's the word in English? Sans défense. They're so ignorant that they're not even aware of the hurt that they cause, you know. So that's why I know that we just have to communicate, and also it's not easy, but it's important to speak up and to react when you see or hear something that feels or that is wrong. And it takes courage, but it's important, because if not you, who?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. If not us, you know, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? It's so important, because I agree with you, by the way. I think we live in a world that's defined by fear and ignorance, and a lot of decisions are made based on those two things. And many times, you know, you said mutual understanding. Some of us don't exercise the courage to actually try and understand something that's different from us. That, you know, that means putting yourself out there. That means potentially being wrong. But we have to try that, you know, because the alternative, like you said, is causing actually more divisions. I actually think, you know, we're in a time where we live in a world of nuance, but we're governed by so many binary systems. And so it's like, you know, you're either politically correct or you're a troll, and there's nothing in between. And so we have to be able to have discussions about difficult things and things we don't understand. And that comes from, you know, that's basically what you did all your life, essentially, being Métis, being a Métis. And for those, that's, you know, mixture of several cultures. We'll go with cultures. Yeah, I know why I'm going to cultures for this, but, and I think it's an interesting, I think it's a very important message for today, just because of where we are in today's world. By the time of this recording, there's been an unfortunate bombing in Sri Lanka. We saw what happened in Christchurch. We've seen what happens in several countries in different parts of the world, in our, both of our continents, Africa, here in the United States. We saw in the World Cup, people really trying to embrace their identity and different difficult conversations around that. So I think we're at a place where we need to talk and really move beyond just the talk and actually implement policies to make people feel seen, heard, and understood. So I have faith that we'll get there. Just I hope we're able to give people like you more voices to teach people how to do that.
Yeah, we need to create more safe spaces for people to express themselves as well. Because I think that that's really lacking. Mm-hmm. There's so many people who could actually bring more nuance to the discourse, you know, to the reality.
Tarizan. You're right. You're very right.
But the spaces are not really there, you know. And so the spaces that exist are actually used by probably by people who don't really have nuance in their way of seeing the world. Mm-hmm. And I guess going back to your question at the beginning, that's obviously why in the media you always see the same types of analysis, the same types of articles. It's not very multidimensional. It's always one thing or another, but there's no, it doesn't really portray the complexity of the issue. And then it influences people. And the ones who actually see the complexity and feel the complexity, well, they feel completely invisible. And then you can understand that sometimes human beings can become violent, you know?
Yeah.
They don't feel as they are, you know, as they exist or as if their existence mattered.
Yeah.
So, I think we just, we really need more spaces for expression. And where I work at the moment at Terre des Hommes, there's an initiative called Living Together. And that's basically the idea. It's a platform that allows the youth, both from the host communities here in Europe and migrants and refugees, to freely express their views on the migration crisis, between brackets, living in diversity, living with new cultures, living with migrants, coming into a new country, integrating. And it's interesting because it's not, of course, there's, I guess the opinions that are not constructive will not be displayed on the platform, but it's when you read, or when you watch the videos, it's refreshing because it's opinions or perspectives that you don't really see in the media.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah. Wow, this is so good. This is so good. So where can people find you and your organization? Because I want them to be able to have an opportunity to, one, talk to you, learn more about ways they can use their voices, but also connect with platforms like organizations you work with that allow people to tell more representative stories.
Yeah, so the organization I work for is called Terre des Hommes Lausanne. It's the foundation based in Lausanne. Mm-hmm. Terre des Hommes, it's in French. It's the acronym is TDH, Lausanne. Yeah. I guess it's terredeshommes.ch, as we are in Switzerland. And the Living Together platform is Living Together Terre des Hommes Lausanne. If you Google it, you can find it really easily, and you can participate. You can share it on social media. You can interact as well with the different young people who have posted their videos on there. And for me. I also post, sometimes, my opinion on my Instagram account. It's public.
Okay.
Fleur Marico. Fleur with an E at the end. Marico, M-A-R-I-C-A-U-X.
Very French. Or M-A-R-I-C-A-U-X. you went French there. Okay, Fleur, I'll put that there in the show notes. Okay, what else?
Yeah.
Definitely make sure to check that out in the show notes. But West Africans listening to this podcast know that I couldn't leave this interview without asking this one particular question. This is a hot topic of debate for many West Africans. So here you go.
Jollof rice is a staple in West African culture. For those who don't know, it's a form of rice with various degrees, you know, tomato, different type of spices. And there's this competition going on with several countries. That, you know, a lot of countries like to debate which has the best jollof rice. I'm Nigerian. Some Ghanaians think they have it. You're Senegalese. You all think you have it. But the fact of the matter is we're going to settle this debate on air right now. Oh. Are you willing to finally admit that Nigeria has the best jollof rice, and it's not Senegal, where you're from, or it's not Ghana? Just tell the world. I just want you to tell the world the actual truth.
Look.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to start by saying this. I don't believe I have, maybe I have once, but I don't remember. I don't think I have tasted it. Jollof from Ghana or Nigeria. And if I did, I don't remember. So I will start by saying this, because I cannot say that one is better when I have not tasted it. But based just on the word jollof, look, I was mentioning wolof, right? Even Google will tell you that jollof comes from Senegambia, the Senegambia region. So, you know, I don't think it really matters where it comes from. To me, if it tastes good, then good for you.
You know,
I have tasted. Yes.
Yeah. I appreciate that, and I'm so glad you admitted that Nigerian jollof rice is the best. So, thank you for saying that. Everybody heard that. Okay. Fair enough. Since we can't settle that debate here, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
How do I use my difference to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to understand my place in the world. And by doing that, because I am connected to so many cultures, I'm connected to the world, I'm connected to different experiences. I can relate to different people through the different experiences that I understand about myself and about others. I'm able to connect, you know, I'm able to relate. And one, as I said, I'm able to at least a little bit influence change, or, you know, make people think about what they actually are not thinking about, or about the word that you so beautifully explained on your Instagram, their unconscious bias. I'm able to, you know, to foster discussions about difficult topics, and I'm able also to just to give a voice to certain people who sometimes do not feel heard or seen. So by seeing myself, by doing the work, the inner work, I'm able to see myself in the other, you know, and to create an interaction with the other so that the other can see themselves as well. Yeah.
Wow. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The brilliant Flo America. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Till next time, ladies and gentlemen, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.